Rudy, we want to welcome you to this afternoon's webinar. Thank you so much for spending your time and helping us talk about becoming an administrator.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you to NAESP for this opportunity to talk school leadership with folks who aspire to become school leaders. So let's go right to the title. I do this as a workshop from time to time, and sometimes I can go 4 hours just on the title because there's so much there. It says, so you want to become a school administrator. Let's talk. And what I meant by that when I designed this presentation and when I came up with that title, there's so many that want to become administrators. There's so many that want to become school leaders. There's so many who want to become instructional leaders. I was one of those people, and countless others were one of those people. But one of the things that I came across initially that just happened to me initially was I really didn't have a lot of people to talk to in terms of what were the ins and outs of school leadership. I had to figure it out. I certainly had my own principal when I was a classroom teacher to talk to, but with me being a classroom teacher and her being the principal, I really didn't have her as someone that I could just sit down on a regular basis and just talk about what is school leadership? What is entailed in school leadership? So then fast forwarding, I meet a lot of folks on the road as a presenter. And a lot of those folks in my audiences for professional development who are classroom teachers, they're aspiring school leaders. So they've got questions. And in some cases during a lunch break, I could entertain some of those questions, but in most cases, I really can't go in depth. So this webinar and the seminar that accompanies it, this is all about those questions. I want you guys to take good notes and hopefully I'm able to cover a lot of what you may be thinking as it relates to your transition into school leadership. So, Honor, if you could go to the next screen and you'll see there's a mirror there. And anyone out there that knows my work at all, you know that everything I do, any keynote, any workshop, any seminar, any whatever, it's always highly reflective. I believe in being a reflective practitioner. I believe that all educators at all levels must be reflective in their practice. They must spend time just running the DVD in their mind or the DVD of their mind, seeing themselves relative to the previous day, just looking at them from the time they woke up, examining the attitude that they woke up with, and then what transpired throughout the course of the day, looking at everything. So here, and then engaging in the self-assessment. So the self-reflection, the self-assessment, so that we could make intelligent adjustments, the self-adjustment to our practice. So here, I want you to kind of imagine yourself being the principal for a moment. Go to the next one. I want you to just kind of imagine you were the leader of your present school. So I'm going to make the assumption that everybody that's on here now with us live and everyone who will watch this later on, that you're an aspiring leader. And I don't mean solely the folks who are non-administrators, but even the assistant principals. Because the world of the assistant principal versus the world of the principal are two very different worlds. It doesn't mean that a principal can't give an assistant principal maximum exposure to what the principalship is. But the reality is that assistant principal does not wear that title, principal. So the accountability relative to the buck stopping here on the shoulders of the principal is not necessarily falling on the shoulders of the assistant principal. So therefore, we're looking at two fundamentally different worlds when we compare the assistant principal to the principal. So I want to take you on a journey, and I want you to imagine that you were the leader of your school, your present school, in whatever capacity in which you serve. And let's look at a few things here. So for example, number one, can you envision yourself as the leader of your school? Think of all the facets of leadership all the variables that you see your principal engage in. Can you see yourself there? And I'm saying to you that the answer must be yes, or I'm working on it. It's a work in progress, because ultimately you have to see yourself in that role, because if you can't envision it, then it's going to be that much more of a challenge for you to ultimately assume that position. I'm saying, and I've always said, it's always easier to assume a new position when one can envision oneself already in it. It's like claiming a victory before taking the first step. So here you are claiming the principalship, claiming success as a principal before you take the first step in the principalship. So now you're watching your principal. You're watching every move he or she makes. You're watching the decisions that are being made. And then you're looking at yourself and you're asking yourself, how would I have handled it? How would I have done X, Y, and Z? Would I have done it the same? Would I have been consistent? Would I have done it differently? Would I have been drastic with the way I do it differently? What is it about how I may lead? And of course, we're speculating because we're not in the seat. But what is it about the way I would lead that may be different from how my current principal is leading? Anna. Number two, what programs would you put in place? In other words, I'm saying to you right now that here you are perhaps classroom teacher. Here you are perhaps in grad school, or maybe you haven't even taken your first course yet. But I'm saying to you, you need to start thinking now. What programs would be in place to enhance learning in your school? You gotta be thinking about that right now. Certainly when I was a teacher, I was anticipating various different programs. I've got a particular emphasis on developing the young men, particularly in urban inner cities. So I'm thinking as a teacher, what programs would I put in place when I one day became principal that would help these young men grow into the men that we all know that they can evolve into? What programs? So, but beyond that, the various programs that make a school work, that make a school run, that increase the probability for student success or for teacher success, you need to be thinking right now, what programs will I put in place in my school when I'm leader? And I might add to that, you got to keep it positive mentally at all times. So you're never using the word if I become principal. You're always thinking to yourself, when I become principal. See, if means it may not happen. There's a 50-50 chance. But when means it's going to happen. It's just a matter of at what moment that's going to take place and become your reality. But you always got to be thinking when. When I was a teacher, I never thought as if. I knew in my mind that some district somewhere is going to give me an opportunity. So it's just a matter of when it happens. So therefore, I've got to be mentally prepared, starting with envisioning myself as the leader of the school, and then what programs will I put in place over time? Let's go to the next one. What policies and procedures will you put in place? So again, you're being self-reflective right now. And you're placing yourself in the role, but you're looking at who you are right now, and you're asking yourself, what policies would I put in place in my school, given the policies that are in place in your present reality, your present school? Because what we're doing is comparing your current school, where you're doing whatever the work you do, to the school you will one day lead. So here you're saying, what policies, based on the policies that exist in my present location, what policies will I put in place? See, that need to be there that are not there right now? Or what policies will I put in place that are there that I feel are beneficial to the school and I want to replicate what I already see? But juxtaposed with the policies, what procedures? What procedures will you put in place? In terms of student conduct, for example, what procedures will you put in place to ensure that your school runs as orderly as it possibly can, that the climate and the culture of the building are conducive to your students excelling at the highest possible levels. What procedures would you need to put in place? Next one. How would you lead? In other words, your leadership philosophy. You know, there's many different philosophies on leading as there are leaders. I led my school a particular way. And the way I led was not like the way the next principal led, who was in the same district down the street. I led it my way because I had a particular philosophy of leadership. And let me add to that. I always ask aspiring principals, and I ask principals, how would you lead? What would be your leadership philosophy, and can you articulate it? That's key. Can you articulate your philosophy? Because see, if you can't articulate it, if you can't express it, then I'd have to ask, then what exactly is this? See? So there was a certain way that I led. There were certain things that I felt needed to be done by me. And they spoke to my philosophy of leading that I could articulate to someone else. So I'm saying that to say here, I just want you to think about, as you're just imagining that you were the leader of your school, what will be your leadership philosophy? And said differently, what will be your leadership style? See, so in other words, if I could be a little bit more concrete, when you walk into your building, what time would that be? If school starts at 8, when are you getting there? And whatever time you say, why so? Like, for example, when I'm visiting a school as a consultant, not as a presenter, but when I'm wearing the consulting hat, when I'm there to help a school to become better, to transform, and I see either a principal or an assistant principal arrive minutes before the students, or minutes before, or minutes after students start arriving, I question that. Because for me, I'm saying that speaks to this leader's leadership philosophy, leadership style. This leader feels that he or she can be optimally effective by arriving to the campus at the same time as the students. Now for me, if school, just using 8 o'clock as a round number, if school starts at 8, I need to be there by 6:30. Let me tell you why. Because I'm a stickler for students walking into a classroom that is ready to receive them. So if I'm going to get there that early, I'm going to every classroom to inspect the cleanliness. I may wear a white glove so that I can touch the windowsill and see if there's any dust or touch anything, because I want that classroom so immaculately clean that youngsters are walking to an environment, regardless of the fact that the school could be 100 years old, that they're in an environment that's ready for them. So I'm going to every classroom. I'm checking the floors. I'm checking the windowsills. I'm checking the desks. I'm checking the garbage cans. I'm checking the chalkboards. I'm checking the whiteboards. I'm checking everything to make sure that that classroom is ready, or to see if I need to have a conversation with my night crew and my head custodian to find out why the school wasn't ready to receive them. And then I'm looking at the hallway walls. I'm looking at the hallway floors. I want to see a reflection. When I look down, I want the floors to mirror a mirror. I want to be able to see me through the reflection of the wax floors if it's that kind of tiling, right? Because I want young people to be able to walk into a school that is ready to receive them, which raises the probability for their success. So that's just a smidgen of leadership style. That was a part of my style. Then there's a whole host of other things I did in the morning, such as going out and greeting students, such as giving the morning message, those types of things. All of that spoke to my philosophy of leadership, my style of leadership. I'm asking you to imagine you were leader of your school. What would be your philosophy? What would the first hour and a half look like for you? What would the first hour look like for you? What would the hour after the morning announcements or the morning convocation? And having morning announcements and morning convocation also speaks to your leadership style. So what would they look like? And then after they're done, if they're part of your routine, what would that first hour afterwards look like? What would the next 2 hours, the next 3 hours, the next 4 hours and on until the day is completed? What would they look like under your leadership? How different would they be from your principal who is currently leading the school? So again, I want you to think about who you will be as leader. And a lot of who you will be or who you will become as leader is rooted in who you are as person. See, a lot of who I am fed who I was as the leader of the school. So you've got to consider that as well. Let's go to the next one. Says, what decisions would you make in all aspects of your school? So again, that goes to what I said before. I don't have to belabor this one. You're looking at everything your principal does, everything the assistant principal does, everything the coaches do, everything that anybody in leadership does, but you're also looking at what your colleagues do, because there's a relationship, obviously, between the colleagues and administration. There's a correlation between administration and colleagues. So here you are, you're questioning yourself, what decisions would I make if I were in that position regarding all aspects of the school? Go to the next one. Next, it says, how similar would your leadership be to the present administration? So again, you're looking at administration and you're asking yourself, would I do it this way? Let's look at the PTA meeting, for example. There are some schools where the PTA, depending on where you are and what level, maximum number of parents at a PTA might be three to five parents. Whereas some other school could be standing room only, not enough chairs to seat them all. Whether, and then everything in between. Whether that PTA, PTO meeting is well attended often speaks to your leadership. See, I'm going to say it again. Everything in the building, I mean everything imaginable in that building, falls on the shoulders of the principal. Not your assistant principal. Of course, you're going to hold your assistant principal accountable. But everything that happens in that school, and when I say everything, I mean capital letters, everything that happens in that building, including the performance of your assistant principal, is on you. So you've got to look at that. So now as you consider that and look at the similarity between your leadership and the leadership in your school. So we're looking at this PTA. What would you do differently to ensure maximum numbers at every parent meeting that you have? See, what would you do, or if the numbers are there, how would you sustain what the current principal is doing through your leadership? So you're looking at the leader, you're looking at you. How can I become different? How can I replicate what I see? But the bottom line to all of this, you're not waiting until you land the position to start considering these six bullet points I put up thus far. You're thinking about this right now. I mean, you may not have even taken one credit course yet. You may not have even been accepted. You may not have even taken the entrance examination, but you know you're going to take it. So therefore, since you know you're going to take it, you got to start thinking like a leader right now. Let's go to the next one. What would you do differently? And I've been talking about that. I've been kind of going ahead of myself. So next one, Honor. How would you utilize your assistant principals? Oh, man, I could do this whole webinar and then add five more to it to respond to this question. How would you utilize your assistant principals? I'm out here in St. Louis, and we just talked about that with the St. Louis administrative leadership team in terms of how the assistant principal is used. See, if you're noticing in your school that the assistant principal is being used as a disciplinarian, you got to ask yourself, is that how I'm going to use my assistant principal? Just imagine, if you will, if that assistant principal is responsible for evaluating 50% of the staff. Here's the question. Why would you expect that staff to grow if that staff is being evaluated and observed by an administrator that doesn't have time to see them. Because that administrator is so inundated with discipline and classroom management issues because of this macro issue called climate and culture, which manifests itself in disciplinary issues and concerns. You got to start paying attention to that macro right now, that climate culture, so that the discipline is not an issue, so that your assistant principals can be those instructional leaders that you must be. You cannot afford to one day be a principal and your assistants are disciplinarians. I could get my 19-year-old daughter to read disciplinary referrals. What do I need an assistant principal to do that for? An assistant principal has to be one of the instructional leaders of the school. One of my mentors told me many, many, many years ago when I was in my apprenticeship, my internship for my own principalship, he said to me, he said, Kefele, don't ever forget, the purpose of your supervision of staff, teachers, is the continued improvement of instruction. Let me say that again. The purpose of your supervision of staff is the continued improvement of instruction, period. That stayed with me forever, folks. Because now I've got to live in classrooms. I've got to provide feedback. My assistant principal has to do the same thing because I'm only responsible for half the staff, or whatever the percentage is, depending on how many assistant principals. They're responsible for a percentage of staff as well. They're responsible for the continued improvement of instruction for staff too, because when they improve in instruction, children learn at optimal levels. But if that assistant principal is in some room reading disciplinary referrals and giving speeches about being a better behaved student, then those teachers that are assigned to that assistant principal are in trouble. And thereby those students are in trouble. And thereby that school is in trouble. And thereby that community is in trouble. Because there's an assistant principal in that building that has no relationship to staff pedagogy. Let that marinate for a second. Let's go to the next one. How would your school be different, a different school, if you were leading it? So that goes right back to the title. How would it be a different place? A totally different school, because the one variable that changed, everything there was there when you got it, except that one thing, you. You're that one variable that came in that was a different variable from everything else that was already there. What would be different about that school because you set foot in it? Your presence in that building impacts it. In what way? That's what that one's asking. Let's go to the next one. Would your school be a better school if you were the leader of it? Would your school be a better school if you were the leader of it? That's another seminar that I do by that title. And I just want you, I will challenge each and every one of you to take that title and own it. I wrote it. I'm giving it to you. I want you to own that one. Embrace it. Would my school be a better school if I were the leader of it? Is your school a better school if you're the one that's the leader of it? See, so just take that, make it yours. The way I use it reflectively. Is my school a better school because I lead it? But here's how I really say it. Let me just give it to you the way I do it when I'm on somebody's stage. Is my school a better school because I lead it? You hear that emphasis? I'm asking you, is it a better school because you're the one that's in that building? Let's move on, Honor. So here we go. The life of a principal. I want to talk to you. I think it's about 10 bullet points or 10 or 12, and then we're going to wrap it up. First and foremost, principals wear countless hats in the span of any given 30-minute block of time throughout the course of a day. Hey, somebody out there in webinar world, you got to understand that. If you're one that can't balance the changing and the changing and the changing of hats in a second's notice. Let me tell you something. This might not be for you. Remember the title of this webinar? So, you want to become a principal or you want to become a school administrator? Let's talk. See, that's the title here. So here I'm saying you could be dealing with whatever situation. At 8:35 and 2 seconds. And at 8:35 and 10 seconds, you got to make a mental shift. In fact, you got to make a physical shift. And at 8:35 and 30 seconds, another shift. I mean, it's possible. I'm not going to say it's going to happen every day that way, but I'm saying you got to be prepared to wear multiple different hats within any given 30-minute block of time. And I'll tell you something. You may have to wear those hats simultaneously. So you got a hat here, a hat above, a hat above, a hat above, a hat above. You juggling all these hats as the leader of your school. Because that's what it entails. As the principal of your building, you've got to be prepared to wear multiple different hats when you're the leader of your school. Next one. Principals are expected to have immediate answers. Oh, man. Immediate answers and solutions for every issue that arises in their schools. That's big. Let me say this to you from the outset. I don't know everything. In fact, I take pride in saying to people in small groups, I say, I don't care what, how small the group may be. I'm in a group of three people in a meeting at a table, a informal conversation. And I let them know within that set of three, I'm probably not the smartest one in that group. If I'm doing a seminar, if I'm leading my staff, I'm probably not the smartest one in the room. I'm good with that. But since I'm not the smartest one in the room, I got other people in the room who are very intelligent. So the question becomes, how do I utilize the talents of the people around me? How do I empower other people around me? So principals are expected to have immediate answers and solutions to every issue that arises in their school. But the fact of the matter is, we don't know everything. But I'm telling you, while you're serving in that capacity, you better come up with something. Because it was very interesting. When I became an assistant principal back in 1998, January of 98, the teachers knew I had just come out of the classroom in December of 97. They knew. They were my colleagues just days ago, but in a different school. So we end school for the holiday break, December, let's say 23rd. I'm a teacher. I come back to school January 2nd as assistant principal at a school across the street, literally. That staff expected me to know not only answers to their issues, they expected me to know issues within the building that I knew nothing about. That's just the reality. So as this administrator, you have to anticipate right now that once you become that assistant principal, once you become that vice principal, once you become that principal, there's going to be a staff there. There's going to be a student body there that's going to expect you to have the answers, to have the solutions to practically everything that occurs in that building. That's just the reality. So therefore, you got to keep your eyes open. You've got to keep your ears open and you've got to learn that building as quickly as you can. You got to forge relationship with those students, your staff as quickly as you can. You've got to get to know your staff because one of the things you're going to discover, not only are you going to be dealing with issues that pertain to the school, but you're going to find that you're also going to be asked questions or expected to be able to resolve issues that relate to staff in their personal lives. That's going to arise too. Trust me. So now you've got to put yourself in position to be able to talk about some of that. But the point of the bullet is to say to you, not that you got to go in there knowing the answer, but it's anticipating that you're going to have people who expect you to know the answer. That's crucial. Let me go to number three. Everything that could possibly happen or go wrong at any given moment in a school falls on the shoulders of you, the leader, right? So two young people decide to go down the street somewhere and have a fight, and somebody gets hurt. One of them, some innocent bystander, some property gets damaged, whatever. You have to answer to that. What they do on their walk home from school is still under your jurisdiction. So I'm just using that as one simple example of the plethora of different examples I could give. You just have to know, you've got to look at you and you've got to ask yourself, do I have the temperament to be accountable for everything that happens in this building? Here's another example. And let me just, I guess this is administratively, Honor, I guess I can say this. If you guys have questions, comments, please write them so that I can respond to them. I guess that's appropriate, Honor. But think about, your school, and we're in the midst of the winter season. Those of you from up north, we're in Minneapolis. So it's mighty cold. It's, now 10 degrees below zero. And your heat stops working, right? You know something? Principal, I know you didn't break the heat, but guess what? You're the leader of the school. You're the principal of the building. That's on you now. See, what are you going to do? I don't expect you to go into the maintenance room and fix it, but now I expect you to have a plan in place to be able to contact the maintenance department, and that they're able to get to that school quickly and do whatever needs to be done to restore that heat so that we don't have to lose a day of instruction. That falls on you. Or let's go on the other side of the coin, and it's a hot day. We're down in Miami, and it's 90 degrees that day. And now the AC stops working. Hey, principal, it's on you. So how are you going to proceed? You got to... Right now, as the classroom teacher, as the counselor, as a social worker, whatever it is that you do, you've got to be thinking now, what would I do? I mean, right now, as you sit here watching me, you've got to be thinking in your mind, anticipate, what would I do in that situation? Now, of course, you're going to learn over time. I don't know if you're going to get that in grad school, because I don't remember that being a part of grad school discussion. But you're going to learn that over time. How you should proceed. But right now, as you sit here watching this webinar, you got to be thinking, what would I do? If the AC stopped working, I got 2,000 kids in the building. Are we going to send them home? And now lose a day or days, a week of instruction? Or have I put things in motion, procedures in motion, that I can get this thing rectified immediately? Because at the end of the day, when parents start talking about the fact that their children are at home instead of being in school, they're going to be saying, what is the principal doing? That's what they're going to say. The community, knowing that there's a school closed because it's too hot to be in the classrooms, they're going to be saying, what is the principal doing? You've got to anticipate that. But more importantly, for now, you've got to be asking yourself, is this a burden that I have the shoulders to carry? Can I carry this thing on my shoulders? Am I equipped to carry that kind of burden? Because that's part of what it is. There are things that happen in schools. I had done a Facebook Live recently, right after what happened in Florida with the school shooting. And I did a whole hour and a half asking principals, is your school prepared for everything imaginable that could happen in that school? So for example, just to hammer the point home about this third one, if you did a lockdown drill, you can't just do a lockdown drill at the times that are convenient for you and the school. What about when the students are in lunch? Are you able to, and their trays on every table, are you able to engage your school in a lockdown when they're in the lunch, in the cafeteria, and make it appear that there was nobody in that cafeteria within seconds? There's no trace of anybody in that cafeteria, because you have rehearsed this lockdown to the extent that even when they're in lunch, they are completely hidden as if they're not even in the building. I'm saying to you right now, you've got to be thinking about that as you're considering the principalship, because that's a part of it. Let's go to the next one, Honor. On top of all the principal's responsibilities, principals, this is my favorite one. Principals are expected to be the instructional leader, the informational leader, the inspirational leader. I call that my three I's. The instructional leader, the informational leader, the inspirational leader. That's the expectation. You're expected to live in classrooms. You can throw out all the excuses you want as to why you can't be present in classrooms. Whatever those excuses are, that's your truth. But at the end of the day, the bottom line, if you're not in those classrooms, you can't say that you're leading that school instructionally, because you don't know what's going on in those classrooms. Let's say, let me give you this hypothetical, and I won't stay on this one too long, I got a few more to go. Let's say that youngster is in a classroom, And you've been given the report that this particular youngster is failing miserably, but you've never been in the class to see it. And it turns out over time, to make a long story short, that the reason that youngster is failing miserably is because teacher is giving this the class, including this youngster, a heavy dose of auditory learning, auditory instruction, I should say, a heavy dosage of auditory instruction. And this kid just doesn't learn auditorily. This youngster is highly visual. Just like these bullet points on the screen, this youngster can't function without being able to see the learning, so that youngster can process, make sense out of the learning. So now, teacher or teachers have concerns about this miserable failure that's happening with this kid. And now even conversations are occurring with the child study team as to what we can do. And the issue is just that youngster doesn't learn the way that the teacher is delivering instruction. But if you're not in the classroom to observe that, you'll never know it. And I'm certainly a victim of that, and it's probably why I'm so passionate about it. So you as instructional leader can go into class and see the landscape and see what type of instruction is being demonstrated in a classroom every day, and to gauge if the instruction is appropriate for the various different learning styles in the classroom, or if it's only appropriate for certain kids, the ones who learn according to the way that the teacher is delivering instruction. So that is crucial to what you do as instructional leader. Then we couple that with the informational leadership, where you got to constantly provide your staff with the information, because you got to stay current. Here, the seminar I did today, one of the administrators said to me, what would you do with phones if you were still principal? Would you confiscate them at the door if phones seemed to be an issue? How would you treat that? And I said, sir, and here's mine. I said, sir, the phone is just a small aspect of this device. This is a computer in my hand. This thing does practically what this laptop that I'm speaking into does. Why would I take a computer from a youngster in 2018? Why don't I take the computer and make this a resource in the classroom, paying attention to the climate and culture of the school, so that we can begin to look at the phone differently, and not as a distraction, but as a necessity to taking young people to another level? That's a different level of thinking, though. But that's that informational leadership. That's that discussion that we're having with staff. And then that inspirational leader and students, that inspirational leader is that leader to make sure that he or she brings the fire, brings the energy, brings the enthusiasm, brings the excitement to the classroom every day. Principal understands, I can't have a school this uninspiring. I can't have a school that doesn't have life, that doesn't speak life into the students. I've got to have a school that's energized, a school that's enthused, that brings about enthusiasm for young people. I've got to have a school where the leadership brings the fire to the youngsters and the staff every day. That's that inspirational leader. And that's not me saying you got to be charismatic. What I'm saying is got to be something that keeps folks energized, wanting to come back, can't wait to be back the next day, can't wait to come back to that particular class, be in the presence of that teacher again, be in the presence of you again, because there's something about your energy that just makes people want to be there. Let's keep going, Honor. Principals are their school's lead learners, too. I'm going to keep this one short because I got a few more to go on the next screen. They're their lead learners. It doesn't mean they're learning more than other people. Some people misuse that title. It means that they're modeling the learning. Just like they're modeling leadership, they're modeling the learning. They're demonstrating for staff and students that learning new ideas, new concepts, new information is vital to our success as a school. Let's go to that next one, Honor. Student achievement is a direct reflection of the principal. Oh, man. You know, I need about 3 hours on this one, folks. Student achievement is a direct reflection on you and I. We could point our finger at everything. But at the end of the day, we made a decision. We said we want to lead this school. So our leadership is going to determine in many ways whether or not these youngsters are going to be successful. I don't care what baggage they're bringing into the building. I don't care what the home environment is. I don't care what the challenges are. I don't care what the hand that was dealt to those youngsters at birth. I'm telling you, if you decide to become a principal, at the core of what you do is student achievement. Sometimes I meet folks and they think that climate and culture is the end result. No, climate and culture is not the destiny. Climate and culture is not the destination. Climate and culture are the vehicle to get to where we're trying to get to. In this case, student achievement. So much more to be said there, but I want to make sure I get that other screen in. So go on to the next one, Honor. It says the existing school climate and culture are a direct reflection of principles too. Huh. Here's what I mean. I've looked at over the years, I have a fascination with climate and culture. And I've looked at the various definitions of climate and culture over the years. And I had written a book called Closing the Attitude Gap. And I said in that book that the climate of a school is simply the mood of the school. It's what you feel when you walk into that building, when you walk into a classroom. So I can't run the risk of letting the mood come into fruition organically. I can't. I got to preconceptualize what I want students to feel as they walk through the front door, what I want students to feel as they walk into a classroom. I can't let that just happen by chance, by happenstance. Myself, yourself, and your team have to have a discussion based on what students will see, what they will hear, what they will feel, the emotion, what they will experience while they're in that school throughout the course of every given day. That climate, the mood, that culture, the lifestyle, how we're living, how we're coexisting in that building. What it is that we say, this is our identity. This is what makes up who we are, the culture. We have to have that ongoing conversation. Like I was in a school not long ago. Hopefully those administrators are not watching because I'm getting ready to say something about them. I was in this school And all of the young men were wearing hats during instructional time in class. So I questioned that. I said, "Principal, why are they wearing hats?" And the principal said to me, "We've given up. It's late in the school year. It's almost summer break. It's almost graduation. We just got tired of telling them all the time." And I said to myself, telling them? But that's not what this is about. Telling students all day the same thing. Take your hat off. Take your hat off. Take your hat off. Pull your pants up. That's not climate and culture. Well, in this regard, the culture is that we wear hats. I'm saying that we have to create a culture where youngster understands that this is unacceptable behavior, not by way of a punishment if youngster violates it, but by way of this is what we do here. This is what distinguishes us here. This is what gives us identity here and makes us separate and apart from everyone else because of the culture that we operate within. So I'm saying to the new, to the aspiring principal or aspiring school administrator here, you've got to consider right now that that climate and culture that will be a part of your school are an extension of you. They're a reflection of you. So you got to be thinking about that right now. What will you and your team say? What are the policies, the procedures, the programs that you will put in place to ensure, if not guarantee, that the climate and culture of your school are conducive to children who may be coming from some very difficult situations, that those kids have the willingness to be great, to be extraordinary, to be phenomenal, to be amazing at what they do. Let's go to the next one, Alan. We're almost done, folks. Principals, and I have to move this to see this. Okay, here we go. Principals are expected to be experts in school law, school finance, and the school curriculum. Oh, man. I need more than a bullet point on that one. Once you decide I want to be principal, you got to know the laws if you are an attorney. You can't go to state statutes and school and state codes and school district policy on every decision you make. You got to know the law. I would recommend to you right now that you get your hands on your state statutes that govern your school districts and your state codes. I would recommend you get your hands on that material today. If you aspire to become a principal, when I went through the internship, my mentor required that I read those books inside and out along with district policy. I wound up memorizing them. I literally, because I was so hungry to become principal, I was starving. I wanted this thing badly. So I literally read those statutes. I read those codes. I read that district policy to the extent that it was like I wrote it because I knew it that well. You got to know the law. So you're expected to know it. Again, not pulling out some book, some manual, some statute book, and now you flipping through, okay, this just happened in my school. Let me see what it says. I mean, it's nothing wrong with going to see to confirm that you're making the right decision, but you got to go in there knowing school law. But you got to know school finance. You got to know how to balance a budget. Depending on the size of your school, you may have a $5 million budget or more. You have to know how to allocate that money. And then you got to know how to spend that money. So you've got to, not only are you an instructional person, but you're an attorney and you're an accountant. You've got to be pretty masterful with numbers. I don't mean you got to be a mathematician, but you got to know how to balance a budget, right? You got to know how to allocate funds. You got to know how to prioritize. You got to know how to earmark. You got to know how to manage and control a budget. So let's say you're an assistant principal and your principal, for whatever the reason, doesn't trust you, doesn't have confidence in you, doesn't see you in that role. They see you as disciplinarian. And now someone decides that you're ready for the principalship at the superintendent level, and now you become principal, and you know nothing about a school budget. So now here you got a $5 million budget. You got a $10 million budget, and you don't know the first thing about a school budget because you weren't prepared. So I'm telling you right now, while you're this classroom teacher, you start familiarizing yourself. Go to your principal and ask your principal, can you groom me? Can you enlighten me? Use a slang. Can you school me on how you manage and control your budget so that you can become familiar? If you're an assistant principal watching this webinar and you know you don't do anything regarding budget, then you go to your principal and say, can I expand my role or at least my knowledge base and become familiar with the workings of the budget, the school budget? And then lastly, school curriculum. Oh man, you can't call yourself principal and you don't know your curriculum. Because then you're looking at lesson plans and you don't know where they're coming from. See, you got to know your curriculum. And you got to read those plans. You got to, and you got to know your standards, whether you use state standards, common core standards, whatever standards you use. So when you walk into that classroom, you're not going in there with a blindfold on. You're going in there informed by those, by your curriculum, by your standards, by that lesson plan, and by your own philosophy, ideas, beliefs, and opinions on good, sound pedagogical practice. I'll leave that right there. We're almost done. Let's go to the next one, Anna. It says, principals must be able to effectively navigate, this is a heavy one, y'all, the politics of the school, the district, and even the city and town, city or town in which their school is located. Oh man, you're not going to get this in grad school. You're getting this from Principal Kefele on the webinar. I'm telling you, and we're not going to get deep with it, but I'm telling you, if there are people, there are politics. Let me say that for someone that didn't catch that one. Put on your catcher's mitt on this one. If there are people, there are politics. So I'm saying to you, therefore, you have to be able to navigate the politics just in your building alone. But then there are politics within the district. You got to be able to navigate that, central office in particular. And then there are politics at the city hall level that have implications for your school. You got to learn how to navigate that as well. That's for a different webinar, though. That's a whole other discussion. I just want to throw it out to you, bulleted, that you have to be mindful. You have to be cognizant of the fact that politics is real. You may not get that in grad school. You may not get that in the district. You have to figure that part out, but it's real. Let's go to the next one. We're almost done. Principals would like to please everyone. Let me say that again before I go to the rest. Principals would like to please everyone, ... But in all actuality, they cannot. It's not going to happen. You could have allies in your building. They love the ground you walk on. And you make one decision that they don't like. And now you got to mend fences with that individual. They've been riding with you for the long haul. Oh, that's a slang, y'all. They've been riding with you for the long haul. And now you made a decision that they don't like. And now they upset with you. They having a conversation about you in the parking lot. Down the hall when they think you're not around. I'm telling you, you want to be a principal? Then your skin has got to be thick. And you got to be able to make tough decisions that may not be the most popular decisions amongst your staff, but you got to make them anyway. You got to be willing to make decisions that may not be popular amongst the ones who are your biggest fans in the building, your biggest supporters in the building, your biggest advocates in the building. You got to be willing to make decisions that they may not agree with, right? Because principals have to make the tough decisions. It goes with the territory. So principals would like to please everyone, but you can't make decisions with the aim that I'm trying to please this whole staff. Can't do it. Because when you make decisions based on being popular amongst your staff, then it may be to the detriment of every youngster in that building. So you don't make decisions so that I can be popular. You make decisions to make sure that they're the best possible decisions for your school. I see what time it is. Let's go to that next one. I'll run through this one quickly. Principals have families too, but they must devote so much of their time, energy to their schools that they sometimes, and for some oftentimes, neglect their own family. So let me give you the short version of that. Make sure that you have a balance, but also make sure that your significant other or your family, whatever your support system is outside of school, that they understand your mission so that you don't have those issues. Because as a new principal, you will be spending a lot of time in that building. You will be doing 12 and 14-hour days. You will be working 8, 9, 10, 12-hour Saturdays and Sundays as a new principal until you figure this thing out and figure out how to delegate authority to all these other folks on the building who may be smarter than you. Remember I said that before, you may not be the smartest one in the room. So as you learn to empower others, then you can reduce a lot of that time. I think there's one more. Anna, hit that last one for me. Principals are human beings with real human emotions. So therefore, make sure that you don't treat yourself as a machine. I treated my body as a machine. I thought I was superhuman, and I was eating any old thing. I was eating fast food. I was gaining all this weight, sugar, sweets. Salt intake was high, all that kind of stuff. And what happened to me on May 1st, 2015? Bam! Heart attack on stage at the University of Miami with a microphone in my hand talking to about 200 administrators. I thought I was Superman. I didn't know that the food I was eating could take me down. So I'm saying to you, principals are human beings. Don't think you're a machine and bad things health-wise only happen to other people. It can happen to you if you're not taking care of you. So you got to take care of you to enable you to take care of others, meaning your school. And then lastly, principals have human emotions. It's all right to cry. It's all right to break down, because I'm telling you, with many of you watching this webinar, those days are going to come. Try not to do it in the midst of your staff and students, though. When you get to your car, when you get to your home, when you get to your significant other, then you break down. But then you build yourself right back up, get back up on your feet, and be ready to go into that school tomorrow and crush all the challenges, all the distractions, all the obstacles, all the pressures, all the demands. Whatever it is that broke you down yesterday, you ready now to go into that school and crush it all and have a phenomenal day toward having a phenomenal year with your young people. With that being said, it's 3:00. I am done. I got it all in, and I appreciate you guys. But before you go, the facilitator here has something to say to you. Go ahead, Anna.
Thank you, Baruti. This has been wonderful. We've gotten quite a few questions, which unfortunately we don't have time for. There is one question that keeps resonating with several folks that have written in, so I'm going to go ahead and ask it because I think it'll address several people's comments. And that is, when they're applying for this position, how do you make yourself stand out? How would you interview? What would be a key strategy that you would tell them to do to get ready to get the job?
Folks, I'm glad you asked that question. Don't leave until I'm done. Listen, I'm giving you the short answer. Anna, I hope I'm allowed to give you this answer.
Sure.
I was getting that question a zillion times throughout the years. I sat in a hotel room in Lake Tahoe, California, right next to Nevada, and recorded a video 45 minutes long in a hotel called Thoughts to Consider for the Assistant Principal Job Interview. It went viral within seconds. And I said in the video facetiously, when you get the job, and I was that confident about the content, I said, when you get the job, you better call me and thank me or hit me up on social media and thank me. Well, I didn't realize that hundreds of people were going to call me, at least 500, to say, meaning every day in my world since I made that video in April of 2017, calls today to say, Principal Cafele, I've got the job. So I went on and made a second one, a part two, because I knew part one didn't have enough. It was 45 minutes. I added another 45, 90 minutes. I'm telling you how to go to the interview prepared to say to the person, I'm your guy. I'm your woman. So I made that video. Then I made the video to say how to get notice to get the job, to get the interview. Then I made the video to say what to do if you don't get, offered the position, what's your next step? And I made the video to say, if I get the job, what do I do now? Then I made two more for the assistant principal who wants to be the principal, about an hour and 45 minutes, the interview, thoughts to consider for the principal job interview. So I'm saying that to say it's an 8 video set. It's on my YouTube channel, Principal Cafele's, message to new and aspiring principals. And check those videos out. And I could sit here in this St. Louis hotel room and tell you, I promise you, that if you do everything the video says, you're gonna be the next one on my phone, or the next one on my email, or the next one on my social media saying, Principal Cafele, thank you.
Thank you, Principal Cafele. I want to notify people that Principal Cafele will be with us at our summer Pre-K-8 Principal Conference on Tuesday, July 10th, 2018. He's going to be doing a presentation on Is Your School Better Because You Lead It? And I hope that you all will look at it. Here is our website on our summer conference, so I hope you all will check that out and ask your questions in person. I mean, I'm sure that Principal Cafele would love to chat with you and help you, and so we encourage you all to come to the conference and network with other principals, network with Principal Cafele, and join us there in the summer in Orlando, Florida. Thank you again, everyone. Appreciate your participation this afternoon. Thank you, Broody. It was wonderful listening to you again.
I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate you guys coming on board this afternoon.